The Master of the Crabs by Clark Ashton Smith. Clark Ashton Smith was a retiring, artistic, poetic, self-educated Californian and a member of the Lovecraft Weird Tales Circle. Of his 90-odd stories of fantasy and science fiction, over half appeared in the years 1931 through 34, and over half were published in Weird Tales. In his latter years, Smith wrote stories only at long intervals. The reason for this decline in his output is that he had no strong desire to write prose, since he deemed himself primarily a poet and an artist. A man of little worldly ambition, he wrote stories only when he needed money, and he needed it most urgently in the early 30s to support his aged parents. Smith laid some of his stories in the prehistoric continents of Hyperborea and Atlantis, some in the imaginary medieval land of Melniant, and some in the future continent, Zothique. Most of the Zothique stories are masterpieces of macabre horror, relieved by flashes of ironic humor and bejeweled with rare words. The present story is one of Smith's later Zothique tales. In Zothique, the sun has dimmed. From the world ocean rises a single vast continent, Zothique, a land of walled cities and boundless deserts, of degenerate kings and bloodless hermits. Islands, some fair and some frightful, dot the seas about Zothique. South across the Induscian Sea lies Sintron. To the west are Naiad, the Isle of the Necromancers, and Erebos, the Isle of the Crabs. Eastward one comes to Eucastroc, the Isle of the Torturers. Sotar, the realm of King Adamfa of the Abominable Garden. Tosk, the Isle of the Ape Men. The Cannibal Isle of Yumoto. The dread archipelagos of the Yosian Sea, haunted by griffins and vampires. And Orneva, the Isle of Birds. Among men, the age of material science has been forgotten for eons. In its place, the old gods, demons, and magics have returned in more evil and more sinister guises than ever. I remember that I'd grumbled a little when Miar Lumivi awakened me. The past evening had been a tedious one with its unpleasant familiar vigil, during which I had nodded often. From sunfall till the setting of Scorpio, which occurred well after midnight at that season, it had been my duty to tend the gradual insipisation of a decoction of scarabs much favored by Miar Lumivi in the compounding of his most requested love potions. He had warned me often that this liqueur must be thickened neither too slowly nor too rapidly by maintaining an even fire in the Anthenor, and had cursed me more than once for spoiling it. Therefore I did not yield to my drowsiness till the decoction was safely decanted and strained thrice through the sieve of perforated shark skin. Taciturn beyond his wont, the master had retired early to his chamber. I knew that something troubled him, but was too tired for overmuch conjecture and had not dared to question him. It seemed that I had not slept for more than the period of a few pulse beats, and here was the master thrusting the yellow slotted eye of his lantern into my face and dragging me from the pallet. I knew that I should not sleep again that night, for the master wore his one-horned hat and his cloak was girdled tightly about him with the ancient Arthane depending from the girdle in its shagreen sheath that time and the hands of many magicians had blackened. "Abortion fathered by a sloth," he cried. "Suckling of a sow that has eaten Mandragora. Would you slumber till doomsday? We must hurry. I have learned that Sarkand has procured the chart of Amvor and has gone forth alone to the wharves. No doubt he means to embark in quest of the temple treasure. We must follow quickly, for much time has already been lost." I rose now without further demur and dressed myself expeditiously, knowing well the urgency of this matter. Sarkand, who had but lately come to the city of Neroane, had already made himself the most formidable of all my master's competitors. It was said that he was native to Naiad, amid the somber western ocean, having been begotten by a sorcerer of that isle and a woman of the black cannibals who dwell beyond its middle mountains. He combined his mother's savage nature with the dark necromantic craft of his father, and moreover, had acquired much dubious knowledge and repute in his travels through Orient Kingdom before settling in Meroane. The fabulous chart of Anvar, dating from lost ages, was a thing that many generations of wizards had dreamt to find. Anvar, an ancient pirate still renowned, had performed successfully a feat of impious rashness. Sailing up a closely guarded estuary by night with his small crew disguised as priests in stolen temple barges, he had looted the fane of the moon god in Farad, and had carried away many of its virgins, together with gems, gold, altar vessels, talismans, phylacteries, and books of eldritch elder magic. These books were the gravest loss of all, since even the priests had never dared to copy them. They were unique and irreplaceable, containing the erudition of buried eons. Anvar's feat had given rise to many legends. He and his crew and the ravished virgins, in two small brigantines, had vanished ultimately amid the western seas. It was believed that they had been caught by the Black River, that terrible ocean stream which pours with an irresistible swiftening beyond Naat to the world's end. But before that final voyage, Anvar had lightened his vessels of the looted treasure and had made a chart on which the location of its hiding place was indicated. This chart he had given to a former comrade who had grown too old for voyaging. No man had ever found the treasure, but it was said that the chart still existed throughout the centuries, hidden somewhere no less securely than the loot of the moon god's temple. Of late, there were rumors that some sailor, inheriting it from his father, had brought the map to Meroane. Mior Lumavi, through agents both human and praetor human, had tried vainly to trace the sailor, knowing that Sarkand and the other wizards of the city were also seeking him.